So welcome to this week's edition of the Retail Risk Podcast, sponsored by Axis Communications, as always. And thanks to our new supporting partner, 3X Logic. Also, my guest this week is Pedro Martins, co-founder and technical director of IT support company Totality Services. Now, Pedro's got a really interesting background, having spent a few years in a variety of technical lead roles, companies such as Vodafone, where he was global infrastructure lead architect, and Barclays Capital as global data center operations lead. So I guess it was perhaps inevitable with that background and expertise that one day he would launch his own business. And that's where we find Pedro today. So Pedro, thank you very much for joining me this week.
Thank you very much, Paul. It's a pleasure. And thanks for having me on your show.
So before we get into sort of the questions, and before I even ask you about Totality Services and what you guys do, give me a little bit of background about you personally, career. What did you actually want to do growing up, staring out of the window, and what brought you to this point? So give us a little bit of insight.
Yeah, sure, not a problem. Actually, from day one, I wanted to become a pilot, but at the time, my eyesight wasn't the greatest, so that kind of got shelved. After that, I really had no idea, I've got to be honest. My dad sort of picked me up one morning, and we went out and bought a computer. I broke it countless times and repaired it just as many times. After that, it kind of just a natural gravitation towards computers of some sort of IT, obviously during those heydays, which doesn't shine me in great light of my age now, I guess, but time does fly. I just sort of gravitated and felt this shift towards IT. But even at the time, you know, there wasn't the amount of accreditations, even sort of courses that you get at university. So gravitated towards IT, did a Bachelor of Science in computer science, and then from there it kind of just took off. Luckily my parents taught me a good work ethic, so I just sort of, you know, always testing myself, always elevating in terms of what I was looking for or looking after, and knowledge wise technical breadth, etc., and found myself working in IT infrastructure throughout the different roles till eventually it came to the inception of Totality Services with my co-founder, who I've known since I was actually at primary school.
Oh really?
Yeah, so much. I've known him longer than my wife now, which is a bit concerning, it's good in one aspect.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I can imagine that. Yeah, your wife sits there rolling her eyes on occasion. It's just a reminisce about.
Sometimes it is. But look, it's fantastic, and it works. That's the key thing. Is that it's not all a bed of roses. You know, that there are good times, there are bad times. It's just very much like a mantra for Totality Services: communication, collaboration, and just getting the job done. Not every conversation you're going to have is pretty. Some of them are more direct, but I think they're there to be had, and they're there to progress, learn, and sort of move forwards.
And you mentioned Totality there, and that'll give an insight into why I wanted you on this week to talk about cyber and some questions I want to pose and try and extract. But give me an overview of the business as well. So feel free to sort of a relatively unadulterated overview and insight to what you guys do.
So basically myself and Lewis, co-founder, we were doing what I guess would be the standard approach, is that after university, you try and elevate yourself and climb, you know, the corporate ladder, so to speak. And we were doing actually fairly well, to the extent in some of the enterprises that I was working in, and Lewis, we always kept in touch. We were always very, very close, irrespective of where we were in the world. And then it just sort of developed that we both had very entrepreneurial sort of mindsets. Both our parents sort of were entrepreneurs as well. So I guess it was ingrained there somewhere, but eventually it sort of came out that we decided to create Totality Services. There was obviously, at the time, it was sort of around Battersea. I was already looking after, with Lewis, a couple of small companies. And then we decided to go basically, you know, full throttle. That was whilst still sort of having our full-time jobs at the time. Okay. So that wasn't easy. But then it got to a stage where sort of you sort of build up, you get your first staff, you know, there are those milestones within a company that you're proud of and you never forget. And then it's sort of one staff became sort of norm. You sort of got 2, 3, 4 to the point that we're just over 30 now in the space of about 3 years, 4 years. So, you know, we've both got a good ethic. We've got a great team around us as well. Let's not detract from that, because Totality Services is fundamentally about the team itself. And in a nutshell, what we do is we're looking after the entire IT landscape for all our customers, generally from 10 users plus, all the way right up at present. We have some customers, or certainly one or two, that are on 300 plus. So, you know, those certainly put a lot of work, you know, test us ourselves, and funny enough, test us on the IT security side of things as well, where we can assist and add value in that respect. And as we all know, the IT landscape is forever changing. I think it's one of the, I wouldn't say volatile, but it's certainly the most dynamic landscapes that exist out there in terms of having to adapt to change on a very, very regular basis. So that's currently where we sit at the moment now. And I got to be honest, one of the key things is that we're all enjoying it. So yeah.
And I'm interested. So, I mean, that's a terrific growth numbers wise. Just an aside, have you taken everybody on remotely from the start anyway? So you were ideally configured for what we all found ourselves in the last couple of years, or are these physically based somewhere? I'm just interested on the structure that you went with, when, you know, relatively recent growth.
That's a brilliant question. Personally, I've always worked from home pretty much since I graduated. It was just one of those. I've always enjoyed it. I was never actually 100% remote. I was either traveling a hell of a lot, or I was actually going on to site visits, going into different offices throughout Europe, for example. So I always had that sort of mindset and mentality, to the point that I think in the first couple of years I was working from home, I think my parents thought I was unemployed. They actually had serious concerns that I was just upstairs sort of working away, thinking, does he actually really have a job? And now they've gotten used to it. It's sort of second nature that sometimes pop up to Portugal and I just work from there with the family. And, you know, it's just a different environment, but we have the ability. In essence, we've always had that capability. I've always advocated it within certain departments. There are obviously some departments that need a bit of that physical presence. But certainly, as you've rightly pointed out, in the last 2 years, that has very much flipped, in the sense that we were forced to have people remotely. But for us, it wasn't an ordeal as it was for some customers. We were prepared. We pretty much had been doing it or partaking over the last sort of 3-4 years anyway, not the entire staff base, but certainly a majority enough that our systems were able to handle it. So for us, it was pretty much at the drop of a hat. We were able to do it, and we always have been. So it's just one of the big things that I actually advocate under some controls and trust, and obviously depends on the field and the remits of positions.
So you've got this fast growing team, the client base is increasing. So just give me a feel, what takes up the bulk of your time day to day? What's Pedro Martins actually doing? What's on your agenda for the day?
The thing about being an owner as well is that you have a lot of plates spinning in a lot of different fields as well. So I try and lay out the day in terms of, like, you know, sort of jumping into certain sectors or certain domains within the company. A lot of interaction and collaboration with Lewis, co-founder, that kind of goes without saying. And then working very closely with the sort of senior management team, who are important in sort of the day-to-day operations, making sure things are running smoothly. I also like to get involved sort of, in the trenches, but sort of rolling up my sleeves if need to. With the technical aspect, that's very much possible. So whether it's obviously guidance, counselling, training, sort of different directions throughout the sort of the service desk, escalations, sort of a help desk management team, and even project engineers and senior leads as well. So I guess it kind of involves, there's a lot of work, but it involves sort of dipping in and out and being able to have a different approach or a different mindset from one problem to another in a completely different sector within the organization, whether it be HR, then dipping into operations, so then sort of, you know, jumping on a call, discussing some accounts and financing as well as strategy. So dare I say, it's a jack of all trades. Yeah, jumping in and out of each different segment.
Yeah, I always find that a bit interesting. So our audience, primarily from the risk function within retail, brands, your hospitality, leisure. Now, you've obviously got some significant expertise around cyber and where that sits in. So one of the questions, and really to try and get your thoughts on, is, you know, if you've got an audience, as we have, listening today in the risk function, and that'll be loss prevention, risk, fraud, asset protection, what do you think their role should be in cyber preparedness? Because often they sort of think it's the domain of the IT department alone. What's your take on where it sits and who should be doing what?
Okay, that's a good question, because you're right, there is the tradition, I'd call it traditional in the sort of a constructive sense, is that, and we have it today, right? IT is IT. Anything associated with technology seems to just sort of manage its way and funnel its way to the IT team, which Yes, in principle it is. However, there are certain domains that we found, certainly within the last five, possibly even 10 years, depending on the sector, certainly 10 to 15 in the financial sector with the big, large corporate enterprises. Security is a sort of grown and almost outgrown itself out of IT, in the sense that it's almost demand. And I'd say that that is the case now with some of the larger players, that it has its own entity. The way of validating that is that, I mean, at C-level organizations now you have a CISO. What does that tell you? That tells you that you've actually split away from a CIO to eventually potentially running alongside a CISO, whose domain he or she is there to sort of deliver, to prevent, to protect, and basically to ring fence any security issues and look after the security environment, okay, and to safeguard the organization from a reputational point of view, from the actual technical tool set. But more importantly, it's not just about having the right technology, right? It's actually educating internally, advocating, counseling, guiding senior management, guiding up, sort of the top management layers and right across the stack. So it's been taken more seriously. It will continue to do so. And I think my recommendation, or certainly the guidance that we're seeing, is give it the attention it deserves to the right people and the right team. And obviously make sure that you get internal buy-in and adoption. Otherwise, it's fruitless having the best security system and the best tool sets that money can buy, but they're not being implemented or people aren't adhering to it. So it isn't just about technology. It is about people. It's about training, awareness, guidance, sort of adoption and so forth. Okay. And that's kind of the direction that we've seen. But now we're seeing it in greater abundance, and it's trickling down. I've always found that in the past, IT has been that generally the larger enterprises start off with certain models, certain structures, and then they find themselves sort of stripping down to the SMB market as well.
And so I want to ask you about what I should be, if I am a risk director of a high street brand, what can I expect and what should I be asking of my IT department to make sure that we have appropriate cyber preparedness? What is a good place to start to educate myself on that, and where would I go? And while you think about a few pointers and a possible answer to that, we're just going to take a quick 30-second break and hear from our sponsors, and then we'll come back.
These days, surveillance cameras aren't just for monitoring a specific area, because with analytics, those cameras can do so much more. Like with any new development, there has been some hype, some disappointments, and lots of new options for the collection and use of data. Axis enables a smarter and safer world by creating network solutions that provide insights for improving security and new ways of doing business. For more information about Axis, please visit our website, www.axis.com.
So welcome back to this week's edition of the Retail Risk Podcast, sponsored by Axis Communications, and thanks to our supporting partner, 3X Logic. Also, before the break, I was asking Pedro about what I, as a risk director in a large retail or brand organization, might expect and what I might ask of my IT department. So come on, Pedro, give me a lesson in short order about, make me sound intelligent. What kind of questions can I ask of the IT department to make sure we are prepared from a cyber perspective?
Okay, it's a good question. And I could be here for a couple of hours, so I'll try and simplify it in as much as possible. I mean, in essence, especially with the domain in the industry that we're talking around, retail, risk and so forth, essentially it's about looking after your perimeters. Okay, now in terms of if you're not completely au fait, if you're not comfortable, you definitely need the right team. You definitely need the right people around you. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you go out and sort of shell out for a C. So, for example, it could be that you find a reliable partner. And generally, that can be a great start or a great induction to find a specialized partner. Obviously, ensuring that you do due diligence and whatever processes that you have internally to find someone that can assist you across the board. Don't feel the need to pressure your internal IT team. They're there to do a role and to fulfill it. And no doubt they are doing it to the best of the ability. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to have the expertise required to sort of assist internally. So there is going to be some collaboration. There's going to be some discussions had with your internal IT to find out what sort of scope technically that they can assist with. Stepping back again, what are you looking for? The basics. You're looking for certain accreditations to make sure and complying with regulatory services to ensure that you are adhering at least to the very baseline of what you need to do. What does that necessarily mean? You've got external facing sites. They need to be protected. Those account for pretty much 30% of retail cyber attacks is essentially on sites, and it's for, you know, credit card phishing. So you need to make sure that those are protected, not as a one-time activity, but as an ongoing basis. And that's where I touch back to the point about finding a potential partner, for example, that can assist, that can get you going, map it out, sort of get some sort of schematic, a sort of strategy to say, okay, these are what you have currently. This is what we need to do to get you there so that you are accredited, that you are safe as a one-off activity. And then there's going to be regular heartbeat activities, or regular testing, regular accreditation. What I'd also recommend is looking at investing, or certainly paying attention to AI and machine learning. So thinking about those content, or those technologies which are fairly new, and how they work in terms of, to understand how to predict and track potential fraudulent patterns, purchases, etc. One thing is actual data breaches. The other one is actually picking up on fraudulent activities. And for that, I sort of see more collaboration between financial institutions, payment services and entities, as well as with retail companies. I think that's a big player as well. Again, not necessarily technology driven. Well, the AI and machine learning is, but the collaboration and ensuring that discussions have been had, communications be had, and almost the sharing of knowledge as well within all the different retail providers, because that's the common anomaly there, is that they all have a platform, they're all accepting payments. With that great power comes great risk as well. Okay, and that's where primarily people are going to be looking for chinks in your armor, so to speak, as well. Okay, so I think it's big emphasis on IT security regulation and accreditation, and even maybe some sort of penalization system. But that's sort of another topic in terms of governmentally and regulators. The other thing, you know, obviously with retail, is you're going to have points of sale points. So it's not just virtual. You are going to have some physical, endpoints out there in locations, albeit with COVID probably restricted, but touch wood, that should come back to normal. So again, safeguarding your physical sites as well. So that's the main bulk is protecting your perimeter. The other aspect is making sure that internally you do what you can. This is where it falls back on your IT and structured security team to make sure that your internal users are following, they're adopting, they're following what they need to do. They're having, you know, password restrictions, regular changes and so forth. And those are the simple bread and butter these days. But again, being held accountable, having transparency, having visibility to make sure that that is being adhered to as well.
Well, you're right. You know, the password change, the updates, you know, they irritate all human beings. And unless there's processes in place that force those changes, you know, I mean, if you're perhaps you're better than I, but whenever I'm asked to create a password for, you know, a new site, it's one of the three go-to ones that I can remember. I prefer a number, but most of them don't seem to offer that functionality. So you're right, you know, you've got to force that process. And it was interesting what you were saying about, you know, everybody offering a payment platform. That made me think, you know, the bad guys and girls, I guess, are sharing data and how to get around a system, irrespective of the retailer or the brand. But often, you know, are the good guys and girls all sit in silos. So we're not sharing all that information. Mm-hmm. So that's going to put everybody immediately at a disadvantage, is it not?
Yep, absolutely. And again, it's just that they're all in the same position.
Okay.
So, and you see, what I failed to touch on as well, there's another sort of pivot point where people are basically a big target data breach. We see that.
Yeah.
And I'd like to think that we get to a point or a stage or a platform where even if your competitor is breached, that you still collaborate to think, okay, I'm not going to, I guess it's impossible, Paul. Okay. So this could be dreamland stuff, but rather having a competitor saying, I'm going to make the most of it, which no doubt they may do so, but it's like, okay, well, how did it happen? And maybe we can work together to determine whether there was some sort of methodology, some sort of plan behind it. And are we next? Maybe the competitor, you know, maybe a competitor that has fallen or has been taken a hit can actually guide an entity to actually preventing a future hit as well. So I agree with that notion. I think there needs to be more collaboration. I think there needs to be more engagement amongst the retailers, although I'm speaking whereby it could be that there is already, but I would certainly advocate it, not just in retail, but in sort of any domain, any vector where, you know, cybersecurity has been compromised, has been breached and so forth.
Yeah, I think the collaboration still has a way to go. It does feel as if the gloating has stopped because people realise that's just not smart.
Agreed, because 5-10 years ago, I think, you know, your competitor would have probably made an advert out of it in some sense. But now we realise that, you know.
Yeah, we might be next.
Stones and glass door, right? Yeah. So they have to be cautious in that respect.
So you touched on, you know, threats in terms of data breaches and all of the others. Have you got a crystal ball in your office or some insights from all of the clients you deal with? What do you think emerging and future threats generally or for retail might be? I mean, you know, are we seeing anything coming down the line? You know, there's a raft of, you know, political instability. Was it the entire Ukrainian government infrastructure went down, possibly because of a rogue state action? We hear about, you know, state intervention in utilities and big retail. You know, what is on the horizon? Because those people have got a lot of resources if they decide to take you down. What should we be concerned and planning for? Armageddon, apocalypse? Really, I don't know. COVID.
No, well, I don't think it's that. Look, I think that the landscape has changed in terms of how you could potentially inflict damage on an entity or a country or an organization. I think that bit is very obvious to the extent that it's brought everyone almost at the forefront in retrospect. Whereas before it was, you know, your battles were fought out on the battlefield. So between countries and entities, you know, and organizations, as we've known through history, I think that is changing dramatically. I also think that there's a ways and means to manipulate. This veers on sort of social manipulation. Is completely different topic altogether, but it still touches on the fact that it there is a risk involved around cybersecurity, in essence, of actually breaching data and then manipulating it in such a manner that you can then sort of drive a certain viewpoint, for example, or a certain direction. So in terms of the crystal ball, as mentioned, this one's always changing. So it's very hard to see what's coming down the line, other than the fact that you just have to be ready to have your platforms as well protected, following the simple guidelines internally as well, but also on the outside perimeter. But I do agree that there is a big shift and there is a big change. Okay, and we've noticed it over the last 5 years. There are large corporations that are being impacted by data breaches and security breaches. Without us really understanding who or why behind it. And I think that's the biggest concern. Is it just a private individual that wants to prove a point? Dare I say it wants to, that is looking for a job. I mean, I still remember that the best way to get a security job was actually to penetrate the organization, turn around, which I now believe is known as ethical hacking to a certain degree, but you turn around, produce a report and say that you're able to do X, Y, and Z, and all of a sudden you'd be offered a job. So it does have that vicious circle in that respect. It's almost a case of, you know, I've got the cure here, so I can come and help you sell it. I can help you safeguard against future infections, you know, using sort of the medical terminology, Paul. So it's going to be interesting. I think that we just have to make sure as business owners, as retail industry owners or CEOs, et cetera, in that board, or CISOs, CIOs, we just have to make sure that we're doing the best job that we can to the best of our abilities and having the right team around you to make sure that you are safeguarded to prevent any potential breaches and hacks and so forth. So that's a really good question, Paul. And yeah. I think time will tell. We'll just have to build up our defenses. And I think the key point is going to be machine learning and AI. Mm. I think that's going to be crucial because you're eliminating human log analysis and so forth and patterns that will help you expedite to essentially give you some, I wouldn't say real time, but as close to real time of what's going on around you without having, you know, 50, 100, 200 humans trying to trawl through logs. So that's been a big change already.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, I also sort of advocating that every organization should have somebody in that CISO role, whether that's a direct person holding that job title or having a partner in to wear that hat. Do you think we've reached the point where that's just, you know, good practice and has to be done across the board?
Absolutely. Look, it depends on the size of the organization, because CISO comes at a different bracket for all intents and purposes. But we've certainly seen in the last 2.5-3 years, bearing in mind we don't deal with sort of the large scale, you know, enterprises and organizations, but we've seen even smaller entities now bring on board a CISO.
Right.
Depending on what function, some of them, you know, financial, for example, or even retail. But we're seeing a trickle of more CISOs being involved, and there's a trend there. And I would certainly advocate it to the point that if you can, depending on a couple of crucial factors, how you know, sort of budgets, how big your organization is, and so forth. But as I said, but if you can't, that's where you find a good solid provider that can help guide and provide those services, which is kind of what we are doing for some of our customers now as well. So doesn't necessarily, I'm not advocating that you go out and you sort of put up a job post on LinkedIn or whatever it is for a CISO. Maybe speak to some partners. Speak to some, there are some great companies out there that can sort of offer guidance at a reduced cost, but still give you the services that you need and the comfort and guidance and the protection of your brand.
Yeah, great advice, I think. And, you know, invariably, an area that's going to get more and more airtime. I think it's an area that more and more people within the business are going to need to know something about, as increasingly everybody comes under a degree of cyber attack or a possible data breach. But Pedro, for now, absolutely fascinating. I think there's probably an addition 2 and 3 as we delve further into cyber in the future. But for now, thank you so much for taking the time to join us this week. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I know you and I were chatting before we came on air that you're based in Reykjavik. I'm entering the Reykjavik Marathon this year, so I will take you up on that post-race beer. And perhaps until then, I wish you all the success.
Likewise, Paul. Thank you very much. Absolute honour. And good luck if you do make the race, and let me know. I'll be waiting at the finishing line.
All right. Thanks, Pedro. Take care. Bye now.
Very much.